session number 10602, reel 25.
Mr. Elliott, Reel 25. You were talking about officers, good and bad officers. You said that most officers you came across you felt were good. Of the ones that you felt weren't good, why was that?
Well, in training, in peacetime, you would be given a place to take and to consolidate in. Now, a trained soldier will try and take that position with the least casualties. And a good officer will either make a reconnaissance of the area with his NCOs or his platoon sergeant, or if it's a company commander, with his platoon commanders and maybe his platoon sergeants. But then you get another officer who will just go blindly into it. They are brave people, but they don't consider the casualties. Now, that may be a good thing in one way. On the other hand, it may be a bad thing. But it gets soldiers who feel nervous going into action with people like that. Now,
can you remember any officers that you had a lack of confidence in for that reason?
Oh, I had one. One was Mr. Clapton. I'd soldiered with him before, and we were on a training exercise in India, and he'd got lost, completely lost. Every man under him knew where we were and knew the way back to camp, and he was the only one who didn't. And we were so late in getting back to camp that the company commander was worried that we'd got lost a rough area, a rough country area. When I mean rough, not the people, not the natives, but the ground conditions was bad, and we were so late in getting back. Eventually that officer did have to ask the men to show him the way back to camp. Now, that officer, if he'd been in the old army, he would have been a brave man, and he would have been classed as a brave man, but to me, that's foolish in modern war.
Can you think of any other men who showed similar characteristics?
Well, the only other one I remember was the officer I mentioned who charged me on guard duty for being off my post.
Yes.
That was the other one. Well, neither of those two officers, I think, passed staff college. You know? Now, you lose confidence in people like that, not because they haven't passed staff college, because they're not straightforward. To me, they're not straightforward. Mind, I would say this about Mr. Clapton. He was killed in Normandy, and he was a very brave man when he was killed. But at the same time, I think he would have the same tendencies then as he had when I soldiered with him in India, and he was a major then. He'd left, by the way, that same Major Clapton, I think he'd been made to leave the army in 1938 because of his not being up to standard, I think. They used to say they gave him the bowler hats. But he'd been left a lot of money by two elderly relations, and I think the excuse was that he was a very rich man. But I think it was well thought of that at the time, that he'd been given his bowler hat because he wasn't a good officer for the point of leading men. Brave man, yes, but I think he was a how do you put the word? I know I wouldn't have liked to have gone into action with him. If it had been close combat, yes, But if we'd had to make a detour or a reconnaissance, I would have hated to have gone out with them. And that's being honest.
Okay, thank you. Perhaps you could tell me about General Martel now. Where were you stationed now with Martel?
Well, when I left Chippy Norton, I went to Burford. We were in the golf clubhouse at Burford in Oxfordshire, which was the divisional headquarters. Well, I settled in as a regular soldier, or a soldier does, or any serviceman when he moves. You've got to settle in, you've got to live with what you've got. And, yes, I got down to it.
Were there many staff at Divisional HQ?
I can't say exactly how many staff there was. There was the kitchen staff, there was all the officers, but again, I wasn't there very long, you know. I didn't even get time to even walk around Burford. I couldn't tell you anything about Burford except that I walked from the divisional headquarters, the officers' mess, to the cookhouse and back, and that's as far as I got. I never even got out in Burford. I couldn't tell you anything about Burford at all.
Well, what time of year was this, now?
This was December, November, late November, December, and then we left there very early January for to join the BEF. We were the advance party. But between going there one day at Burford, one day the general said to me on the morning when I'd got him ready to go out to his job, he says, "By the way, Elliot, you'll be looking after two very important people coming here today. They're coming for lunch. And you will be in the toilet area of the officer's mess," he said, "and it'll only be with these two people to be allowed in." He said, "You will see to that." He says, "You will also take a towel, and when the people come," he said, "you will hold the towel for them. They won't have to go for it." I said, "Well, who's coming?" He says, "You'll see when they arrive." He says, "But you're not getting to know now." So I said, "Well, all right." So I said, "What time have I got to be there?" And he gave me the time. I couldn't tell you the time, but maybe about 1 o'clock or 12 o'clock. I don't know. I can't remember the time. But I was in this toilet area waiting when the two people came. One was His Majesty King George the VI, and I think the other was General Roland, I think his name was. Anyway, he was the Adjutant General. He was the Adjutant General to the Army. And he was the ADC to His Majesty. And I was having to take parts of the caps, the respirators, etc., which they took off, and to look after them, place them in a safe place and look after them while they cleaned themselves up, and I held a towel for them for that. And then I had to stay there all the time until they'd had lunch. And they came back and I helped them again to dress to leave. Now, that evening...
Can I ask you, was anything said to you by these people?
No, no, they didn't speak to me. Neither spoke. They were talking to each other, but they never spoke to me. But I was the only other person in that area other than the general and His Majesty. I mean, if I'd wanted to take either lives, it could have been done. But
can you remember anything they were talking about?
No, they were just talking in quiet tones, and in any case, to be quite honest, I wasn't interested really in what they were talking about. They may have been talking about where they'd been or where they were going to, you know, after lunch, but I just couldn't remember. There was one incident which did happen when His Majesty examined, or inspected if you like, the guard of honour that was from DivHQ, and that consisted of Green Howards, East Yorks and Durhams. I was told by one of the Green Howards lads, no, the East Yorks lad from Holway, East Yorks, he said when His Majesty walked past him, he stopped. And he said, "You were on a guard of honour at such and such a place at such and such a date. And the lad was shocked. He was surprised that His Majesty should, you know, whether someone had told His Majesty about it, I don't know. But this lad was rather surprised, and he said, I felt 12 feet tall, he said, when he said he remembered me being on another Guard of Honour parade with a TA in the north, in Yorkshire somewhere. So, and at the same time, when while His Majesty was examining, I think they were given a present, you know, the Royal Salute, present arms, and somebody fired a round off. They'd left the safety catch off, they were loaded, the arms were loaded. But one of the lads had left his safety catch off.
Full hell to pay for him.
Oh, no, I think it was accepted. It was. I don't think the lad got punished, you know. But those around went into the air.
You weren't there when all that was happening?
No, I was inside the building. I heard the round go off because I was inside the building. But you ask the lads what happened, and they tell you. They're quite honest.
What was your reaction to meeting the King?
Well, what can one say? Is one going to be big-headed, or one going to be normal, or what? You know, I was a minor son without ever any thought of meeting even a general. And here I was looking after a general, and I meet the highest of the army. It's only brief meeting, but how many people out of the millions of this country have done that to the sovereign, been in close attendance on the sovereign? I felt as I always felt. I've always been a royalist. I won't make that mistake. I may not like some of them, but I've always been a royalist as long as I can remember. And I felt really great that day that I should be in close contact with His Majesty. Now, this will surprise you, I think, and surprise a lot of people. But that night, when I was in attendance on the General, you see, the General went out with the King and that in the staff cars, as the King was inspecting the division before joining the BEF. So this would be in late December 1939, or the first days, and mind, I mean the first days of January 1940. And the General said to me that night, he said, "Well, Elliot, what did you think about your guests today?" I said, "I don't know who gave permission for His Majesty to come out." But I said, "In my honest view, he should have been in bed. He shouldn't have been here." He said, "Why do you say that?" I said, "Did you see His Majesty? Did you look at him?" I said, "You forget, sir, I'm a trained RNO. And I said, His Majesty is not a fit man. I said, he's a very sick man, and he should be in bed, and somebody should be looking after him." And the rather surprise I got from the General was, and he was very sincere, he said, "You know, Elliot, they have a duty to do, they have a duty to perform." He says, "And they will do it." I said, "Well, I still say the same, sir." I said, "I know I might get wrong for saying it, but I said, there were fools who let him come out on a day like this," I says, "in the state of health he's in." I said, "I don't know what's wrong with him, but I said, he's a very, very sick man." And that's the way I felt that day. I was honoured, but I was really sad, because he was a sick man.
This occurred whilst you were at
Burford.
Burford. You stayed there only for a short time, is that right?
No, I wasn't there long.
So shortly after the King's visit, in fact.
I was away over to France.
Mm-hmm. Can you tell me about the journey over there and what role you had to play?
Well, the General was the advance party. The General and his ADC. I'm not sure whether we only had two vehicles, the staff car and a pickup. Austin's, I think both were Austin cars. The both drivers, Royal Army Service Corps. All O'Gee was in the second car. The driver and the General and his ADC were in the front car. I'm not sure whether it was a staff officer or not. There might have been another staff officer. And there was the driver, a Royal Army Service Corps private, or driver. There was myself and the lad who was batman to the ADC, and all our gear were in that second car. Yeah.
These must have been pretty large cars.
There was four seaters, you know, and an estate car, you know. And we went to Southampton. We left Burford. I'm not sure of the route we took, but we got to Southampton. We travelled overnight, landed at Cherbourg. We left Cherbourg for Caen. We stayed at Caen.
Did the cars come over with you?
Oh yes, we took the same two cars, the same drivers, yes. We had to wait for them coming off the ship. Then we travelled in the same two cars. We were in, the generals was in a first class hotel. We were in a lower grade hotel, the men. Then we went from there.
So you didn't wait upon your general while you were in?
Oh yes, I went to his hotel. Oh, I saw him there. Oh, the other lad, he looked after the office. Oh, wherever they stopped, you know, you looked after them. And when we left, there would always be what we would call haversack rations. There would be packed sandwiches or something. And if we were going to travel a long way, we would stop on the roadside at certain times, have the meal, and then just press on again. We went from there, and now I think we got to Amiens or Rouen. We stayed there overnight. Then we went from there to, I'm not sure, I think it was Lens, but the French pronounce it as Lens. I think we got to Lens. And I'm not sure whether we went into Lille after that, but we had an HQ at a place called Billy Montini, a mining village. The headquarters set up there, and all the DVHQ came there to start off. And then...
What building were you using?
Like a miner's hall. There was a large building. Gracie Fields had entertained some troops in the same building just before we arrived, and we went into that building, and there was in billets in houses or cafes or whatever, some of the men, you know, the staff, the 50-div, full 50-div staff, when they arrived, went into those buildings. And then we were in one large place where it was the officers' mess, a large building.
Did you have to wait in the officers' mess at all?
We waited on. We helped to get the mess run, but that was mainly a Royal Army Service Corps do. The NCOs and the permanent office mess staff were RESC, but if they needed any assistance, they would just ask for a batman or a couple of batmen. The sergeant would say, it's your turn today, or yours tonight, or whatever. And there was never any arguments. The lads used to go and help. It was like, it was just like an ordinary mess in peacetime, you know, the way it was being run. We had a good chef.
What were your duties to General Martel while you were here?
Well, I took on two duties then, not only being his batman, but I also was classed as a bodyguard, and wherever he wanted me to go with him, I always went with a loaded rifle. Not with safety catch on, one up the breech, no bayonet fixed, but they were there. And I would sit in the front seat with the driver, the corporal driver, the Royal Army Service Corps, Charlie Darcy. We got on first names after a while. He always thought he should have been a sergeant. I told him he was looking to be a corporal driving, but never mind. I acted as bodyguard, and when not bodyguard, I was back in the headquarters, and I just waited, or whatever jobs was doing. If he wanted anything cleaning or special, I would say that was done. After that, we moved from there. I can tell you a little story here. This is a good one. I think it is, anyway. While we're at Billy Montini at the officers' mess, I had just come back after being on a long day as bodyguard to General Martel. We'd been, I couldn't tell you where we'd gone, but we'd been somewhere and we'd been out all day, and we came back late, and I had to get all his gear cleaned up, ready for the next day before I could go to bed, which I did. I did it in the officer's mess. And then I left the officer's mess to go to my quarters when I was stopped by a military policeman. Well, all the military policemen on 50 Div knew me. They knew what my job was, and they knew, you know, that my times didn't go to, what is it called, curfew time, you know. Anyhow, this military policeman, he was a new lad. I'd never seen him before. And we'd got on, we really got on well with the military police. There is no argument about that. They were great lads. And this one turned around, he said, "Where's your pass to be out after this time at night?" And I'd just left the officer's mess. I says, "Oh, Corporal," I said, "don't you know who I am and what I do?" He says, "No," he said, "if I knew, I wouldn't be asking you for a pass, would I?" I said, "Well, hasn't your mates told you who I am?" "No, they haven't." I said, "Oh, all right." I said, "Well, I'm Batman to the GOC. I said, I've just come in from a day's outing. I said, I want to go to bed because I said, I've got to be back here before 6 o'clock in the morning." "How do I know that?" I says, "Gone back and asked the mates." I says, "Didn't bother us," and I walked away and left him standing in the street. Anyhow, as used to happen with me, in, it was very bitterly cold weather. I used to make the generals, I used to put the kettle on, because I was there before the mess stopped. And I used to put the kettle on and make the general a cup of tea. You know, I used to make a teapot of tea.
This is in the morning, is it?
This is in the first thing in the morning. And when I used to call the general, I used to give him a cup of tea. And when he got a cup of tea, I used to take a cup of tea to the mess corporal. I used to have a one myself. And the military policeman, who was the guard, was always on the door. I used to take a cup of tea to. It was no nothing. It wasn't getting anything for anybody. It was just a courtesy, which we'd got to know these military police lads, and they were very good. They turned blind eyes when it was not necessary to be regimental. They could be regimental, my mind. They, if there was any strictness, they would be there. But they turned an eye now and then when they got to know the lads and what the lads did. They wanted demanding passes and this, that and t'other. And as I say, as a little courtesy, when I used to make the tea, I used to take the lad a cup of tea out, the same as I used to have a one. And when I went out the next that morning, who should be there? It was the military policeman who'd asked me the day before, and he looked at me. He says, "You again?" I said, "Aye." He says, "You must be the one that gives the policeman the cups of tea on a morning." I said, "Aye." I said, "That's what I told you last night, wasn't it?" And he said, "I don't suppose I'll get a cup of tea the day then for stopping you." I said, yeah, get it. And I just gave him a cup of tea. I said, "No, lad," I said, "I don't bear malice to anybody." I said, "You are doing your job." I said, "I'm doing mine." I said, "A cup of tea didn't hurt anybody."
Can you, compared to your previous duties as Batman's Mr. Jennings, how was your role with General Martel different?
Not very much different. They were very similar. Officers weren't looking after. Only some officers are more demanding than others. And depending on the position of the rank they held and the position of the job they held. You see, I mean, a platoon commander doesn't have, or a battalion commander, a brigade commander doesn't have the same as a divisional commander. And you may have another general coming, you may have brigadiers coming, and you maybe look after two or three officers, where with a lieutenant you might be lucky if you look after two. You'd be very rarely expected to look after two, but when you're with a general, you could possibly look after a number of officers, brigadiers or anything, if they were guests of the general, or if they were there on a staff visit or an inspection, you'd be expected to give them the same treatment as you give your own general.
Oh, yes. So this means that if the general was four influential people, you'd have to do what, clean their kit as well?
Oh, yes. Yes. That happened. Yes.
Were there any things, apart from that expansion of duties, were there any other things that you had to do that you, with, for General Martel, that you didn't have to do for Mr. Jeffries?
Not really. I kept him clean, kept his quarters clean. He was always there in attendance, only we were in wartime. So therefore, from time to time, I was his bodyguard, where I was never bodyguard to Mr. Jeffries. Now, with Mr. Jeffries, I would, with an officer, a regimental officer, when you're a batman, you could be a batman driver when the vehicles came, but before the vehicles came, you would be his runner, platoon runner, company runner, or battalion runner. You know, where when you were with the divisional commander, you were strictly a batman, or more or less his personal aide, if you like. You looked after him, and whatever, you know, well, that was the same as any other officer. But you could be called bodyguard as well. You could ask you to go with him as his bodyguard. That's if he was going into some area where maybe he'd never been before, or, you know, there'd been any rumours or anything, or any information. I was often, not often, but I did go with him a number of times as bodyguard in the front with a loaded rifle.
When you were at Villamontini, was it usual that General Martel went out on these visits from Divisional HQ? You mentioned that, I think earlier on, that you'd come back, you'd been out all day and you'd come back late. Was that a usual thing?
Yes, usual for him to go out early morning and come back late at night.
What were the purposes of these visits?
Well, the reason was that we were a new division, just gone into join the BAF. And we were finding he was finding the areas for where his different brigades and different battalions would be billeted, or, if you like, where the formation would be set up on joining the BAF, ready for action or support or whatever it was. You see, we were one of the only fully motorised divisions of the British Army, and we were a two-brigaded division rather than a three-brigade. There was the 151 Brigade, and I'm not sure the other one, I think it was 150, which was a Yorkshire Brigade, a mixture of East Yorks and Green Howards. And they were motorised. They had more vehicles for taking troops to move around the front anywhere. And of course, the general was out nearly every day. When we first went, finding billets and finding the positions from the general staff where he had to go. But it was on the odd occasion he would say, I think you'd better come with me tomorrow. He would say at night time, I think you'd better come with me tomorrow, because he would say, I had to get my gear ready to go with him. And to tell
why did he want you to accompany him on some of these visits?
Just as a bodyguard. You see, there was rumours and counter rumours all the time.
And what would you do when you did accompany him?
Well, I went and...
I sat in
the front seat next to the driver. And when the car stopped anywhere, I got out first and to open up for the general or the corporal, say, I'll do it this time, but I'll still be there. Now, I know that might sound a bit daft, but one day we went, I think it was to Evro. There's two places, Evro and Evron. We were in both places, and one has a cathedral, and that was the place where we just pulled into the market square kind of thing, and as the car stopped, the driver got out first and was coming round the front of the car, and I was getting out to this side, the left side,